go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are at a minute past the hour on this, the 20th day of March, 2015. And apparently we are 44 minutes away from something it seems like I've been looking forward to for about 3 months. Yeah, and thank you for the official notice in the chat room, Gerald. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go. And particularly to the chat room link, if you want to jump into the conversation. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, 4 of 9. Good evening, Gerald and Jug of Punch. And in both of his manifestations, since he is, in fact, a third-stage guild navigator and able to fold space, both Man Cave and Sparky, inveterate, indefatigable, veteran, longtime chat room moderator, Sparky. It's Friday on the front porch. Friday on the front porch, of course, means that we will close the week, as is our longstanding tradition, as was handed down to us by the most ancient Horntonistas, that we gather together in roundtable, extraordinary, ordinary conversation at the close of every week. Yes, indeedy. If you've never participated in the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, the best way to do it is by Skype. And to do it, you simply send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you hooked up and you can participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, which we will get rolling in about, 58 minutes or so. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. And, of course, a gentle reminder that this is a listener-supported effort, is, was, and for as long as it continues to exist, will be. With thanks going out this evening to Janie and to John and Bernice and to Greg for helping us to fill in the hole so that all we've got to raise this evening is a paltry $175 to stay even with our fundraising aspirations. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And a reminder that, yes, there are some nosy sorts of questions in that interface about cost of your mother's lower plate from the dentist back in 1977, but you can leave that kind of stuff blank. Okay? That's just about getting to the, you just got to get to the next screen. That's just get to the next screen. Okay? And if you want to participate by the U.S. Postal Service, which is a noble and worthwhile thing, then we highly recommend, well, mailing your check or money order made payable to The Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, but to The Horn, to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. A little bit of a program note coming up. There will be no Friday on the Front Porch a week from tonight, as a week from today is the 18th birthday of our youngest, and it will be Birthday Observation Friday and not Friday on the Front Porch. So my apologies in advance, but I think we all understand that, well, you know, us liberals, we do from time to time have some family values of our own, oddly enough. So that's what we'll be doing a week from Friday. Also, I'm not going to announce the name just yet, but what I think will be a really, really cool conversation coming up on the 25th. And I'm looking forward to it like I can't begin to express, and I'll announce it when we get a little bit closer. But, yeah, this is going to be real cool. I get to I get to interview an icon.
Who?
Yes. And don't worry, it's not political. Shall we say it resides in the realm of the arts. Okay. How about a further hint? Let us say that it resides in rock and roll and soul. Hmm? Yeah. All right, then. At 5 minutes past the hour, it struck me earlier, this being the day that it is, that just to sort of put us in the right mood, maybe this.
Once there was a thing called spring, when the world was writing verses like yours and mine. All the boys and girls would sing as we sat at little tables and drank May wine. Now April, May, and June seem sadly out of tune.
Yeah, never mind. No. Why does nobody ever mention March when they talk about spring? Possibly because, well, March is not very spring-like. But, I know, Carol Abel, it's the first day of fall up over down under. Yeah. But it is the vernal equinox here and the autumnal equinox in the southern hemisphere. And happy day to you. That day of balance, that day of equanimity, that day of equilibrium when day is as long as night, a nice even 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Wow, okay, cool. Thank you for the reminder. Happy birthday to Blake in Madison, who has joined in the chat room festivities. Happy birthday indeed, and many happy returns. Yeah. We had our snowflakes yesterday. Today it was mostly just crummy, sloppy rain, but it's coming. I can feel it in my bones. It is on its way. Soon the ramps will begin pushing their little green leafy stems through the Appalachian mountain soil. I've already heard my first peeper hanging on to dear life near some toxic creek poisoned by the coal industry. Ain't I just a little ball of happy? Yeah. Let's see. Where should we begin this evening? Well, how about an update? I ran across this and thought this would make there's other stuff, but how about this as an update? We have spent some considerable amount of time on this program talking about Arkansas's paragon of right-wing, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, evangelical fundamentalist virtue representing Justin Harris and his lovely wife, Marsha. Marsha, Marsha, Marsha. Oh, my nose. Oh, my nose. Oh, my. Oh no, that was it. Yeah. Marsha. It's always about Marsha. Mm-hmm. You may recall it was Representative Justin Harris and his wife, Marsha, who adopted a trio of little abused girls and were paid handsomely for it. I knew there was money involved. Took a while to find out for certain, but yeah, there was money involved. They got paid to adopt these little children. Isn't faith great when it's attached to a check? Yeah. Justin Harris, Creflo Dollar. Same in my book. But anyway, There was money attached to it. And hey, here's a little fun fact everybody can enjoy. Even after Representative Harris and his lovely wife, Marsha, had decided to dump the children like unwanted kittens thrown in a croaker sack into a creek, it happens. They continued to cash the checks. No, really. Even after they had rehomed these children, and even after, rehomed with a family, the father in which would go on to rape one of the little children. Yeah. It turns out that, yes, indeed, Representative Harris and his godly, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, evangelical, fundamentalist wife kept cashing the checks with which they were provided for adopting the children. Mm-hmm. Lovely, huh? Like I said, these being Republicans, you knew there was some money involved somewhere. Well, but that's not even the actual story. No, of course not. The real story is that Representative Harris continues to represent, even though it's pretty obvious that he's a malodorous bucket of scum. In continuing to represent the good people of Arkansas, he does things like sponsoring new bills. Gosh, I wonder what kind of bill a man who dumps children would co-sponsor. Shall we take a peep? Yeah. Let's do. Now this is a man who believes that every fertilized egg is sacred. Still no legislation to criminalize masturbation by men, but every fertilized egg is special and sacred. Especially when it comes to to eggs fertilized by rapists. You wonder if maybe he was inspired in sponsoring this legislation by the man on whom he dumped his adopted daughters. House Bill 1424 of the Arkansas 90th General Assembly, with the primary sponsor being Representative Harris, for an act to be entitled, listen carefully, Hockey Puck, for an act to be entitled an act to establish the Parental Involvement Enhancement Act, to repeal the parental notification provisions, and for other purposes. Subtitle: to establish the Parental Involvement Enhancement Act and to repeal the parental notification provisions. Be it enacted, they scream in the Arkansas General Assembly, because this is all in caps, be it enacted by the General Assembly of the State of Arkansas, Section 1, Subchapter 8, Abortion, Parental Strikeout Notification, insert Involvement Enhancement Act. And then they struck out the entirety of 2016-801, which said, no person may perform an abortion upon an unemancipated minor or upon a woman for whom a guardian or custodian has been appointed because of a finding of incompetency, unless the person or the person's agent first obtains the written consent of either the parent or the legal guardian or custodian. Then it wipes out definitions. The Parental Involvement Enhancement Act does, wipes out the definition of abortion, wipes out the definition of medical emergency, wipes out the definition of minor, wipes out the definition of parent, wipes out the definition of unemancipated minor, wipes out 2016-803, the manner of consent. Now remember, these parental notification acts were a darling of the right wing a while back, because we wanted to make sure that if Precious Lumpkin got knocked up by Uncle Daddy, that we would have to go and tell Uncle Daddy and get Uncle Daddy's consent. Uncle Daddy! For Precious Lumpkin to go and get Uncle Daddy's the pernicious little baby removed from Precious Lumpkin's womb. Yeah, and I mean, the wipeout just goes on and on and on. Oh, there it is, the new language. 2016-801. Remember, this has been introduced in the Arkansas General Assembly by Representative Justin Harris, who is deeply concerned about the children. Mm-hmm. 2016-801. This subchapter shall be known and may be cited as the Parental Involvement Enhancement Act. Enhancement. Last time I heard that word used very often, there was some goofy guy who reminded me of Jethro Bodine in ads on TV involving natural male enhancement. Never mind. Enhancement. Immature minors. The General Assembly finds that, really, we should kind of do this with a bug tussle accent, shouldn't we? The General Assembly finds that immature minors often lack the ability to make fully informed choices that take into account both immediate and long-range consequences. The medical, emotional, and psychological consequences of abortion are sometimes serious and can be lasting, particularly when the minor is immature. The capacity to become pregnant and capacity for mature judgment concerning the wisdom of an abortion are not necessarily related. Parents ordinarily possess information essential to a physician's exercise of his or her best medical judgment concerning the minor daughter. You know, a minor daughter. Like a minor daughter that you would dump with somebody who would then turn around and rape her. Mm-hmm. Parents who are aware that their minor daughter has had an abortion may better ensure that she receives adequate medical attention after her abortion. And parental consultation...
Wait a minute, this just isn't working for me. Hang on. Needs a little help here.
Well, yeah, see, that's the problem, News Ninja Carol Baker. Carol asking, didn't Representative Harris and Marsha abort their parental involvement? Why, yeah, exactly.
Now, hold on here. This really does need a soundtrack, though. There we go. Just a minute. Yep.
Parental consultation is usually desirable and in the best interest of the minor. Based on the findings in subsection A of this here section, the General Assembly's purposes in enacting this enhancement to the state of Arkansas's parental notice law are to further the important and compelling state interest of protecting minors against their own immaturity.
I would add parenthetically, of protecting minors against their own uteri.
Fostering family unity.
Foster family? Really? It didn't just burn his little fingers to type that? Well, lucky for him, he's got someone who does the typing for him.
Fostering family unity and preserving the family as a viable social unit. Protecting the constitutional rights of parents to rear children.
That might be part of the problem, Uncle Daddy.
Who are members of their household. Reducing teenage pregnancy and abortion.
Really? This is going to reduce teenage pregnancy by keeping the teenagers pregnant? F me, go figure out the laws of nature in Arkansas.
And in light of the foregoing statements of purpose, allowing for judicial bypasses of the parental notice requirement to be made only
in exceptional or rare circumstances.
Then we move on through the definitions. Less than 18.
Emancipated minor means a person less than 18 years of age who is or has been married or who has been legally emancipated. And has a pretty mouth.
And here's where it gets interesting. There's a definition in here of parent. Remember, this was introduced by Representative Justin Harris, a good, godly, upstanding, Bible-believing, check-cashing, evangelical, gundamentalist Christian.
Parent means either parent of the pregnant woman, if both parents are living, one parent of the pregnant woman, if only one is living, or if the second parent cannot be located through reasonably diligent effort, or C, the court-appointed guardian or custodian if the pregnant woman has one.
A
physician shall not perform a abortion upon an unemancipated minor or upon a woman for whom a guardian or custodian has been appointed because of a finding of incompetency unless the physician first obtains the written consent of either parent, the legal guardian, custodian, or the commissioner of Major League Baseball.
You see where this is going, don't you? This has nothing to do with protecting children. And interestingly, there's no definition in there of parent to include
whomever you happen to dump your unwanted, recently adopted girl children with.
Just another reminder that that great big bearded juvenile delinquent with the handful of lightning bolts up in the sky doesn't really exist.
Because if and he did, representing Harris would be a greasy spot.
Agreed? I think we agree. Nope. Hypocrisy is unknown to these evangelical fundamentalists. God damn. Carol had her speakers on right loud, and she said, please don't play that song anymore. The natives think they're invited for dinner.
Squeal like a pig. Ooh, squeal, suey.
Yeah, they holler that a lot down in Arkansas. Suey, pig. Especially at football and basketball games. But there you have it. Yes. Representing Justin Harris, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical, fundamentalist Christian, wants to make it harder for little girls who have been impregnated by Uncle Daddy to get the fruit of Uncle Daddy's labors out of their innards. One of the things, had I continued to read the bill in that truly annoying hillbilly voice, is that where a less than 18-year-old unemancipated minor woman could once have what was called a bypass hearing, in which she could quietly go about the business and not having to tell Uncle Mom, Aunt Mama, and Uncle Daddy about all about how she didn't want to carry Uncle Daddy's baby. And by the way, yes, I recognize that it's unfair to make incest jokes, but being as I'm a West Virginian and have had, among others, the coal industry make a goddamn slew of them about us, I figure Arkansas will understand. If not, I will personally apologize most humbly to the representative to the Horndonistas from Arkansas, our own much-beloved Haley. So you used to be, you could have, because it's real, a little girl who got raped by daddy, and let's face facts, incest is something that happens all over the United States, and it isn't confined or even statistically more prevalent in the South or Appalachia or greater Ozarkistan than it is anywhere else. Incest happens. And rape happens. And that bypass proceeding was available to an unemancipated minor female in such instances where it became clear that mommy and daddy didn't necessarily need to know. Well, Representative Harris has moved to make sure that that bypass proceeding is going to get to be a lot more difficult, to the point of being damn near impossible. Among other things, let's revisit ancient history for a moment. In particular, the Greek world, the ancient Greek world, and the ancient Greek language. Everybody, and I imagine we'll have most hands raised here. Everybody raise your hand if you know the origin of the word hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. Medically, it is the removal of the reproductive organs of a female. Etymologically, however, it refers to the fact that the ancients believed that women were made all crazy, hysteria, by their femaleness. Right? Yeah. I mention that because hysteria was, for a very long time, deemed to be a genuine, bona fide, no kidding mental illness. Mm-hmm. Back with the advent of electricity, back in the late 19th and early 20th century, patent medical devices were even sold. We call them today vibrators, which were said to decrease a woman's propensity for said hysteria. And you know what? They may have worked. Just say it. I mention all of that because once HB 1424 passes, and bear in mind that all the other good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, gun-dementalist evangelicals in Arkansas will merrily vote for this without even an instant of noting the irony of having been introduced by a guy who dumped his female children with a rapist. Mm-hmm. HB 1424 there in the Arkansas General Assembly requires that before a young woman who has been raped or is a victim of incest or is pregnant for any other reason can evade telling mommy and Uncle Daddy about it, she has to have what is referred to in the legislation as an evaluation and counseling session with a mental health professional from the Department of Health. Here's the fun part. There's nothing in the statute that says when that evaluation must take place. So let's say she's missed her period and she's 8 weeks along. 10 weeks. 12. Well, it's kind of like the way they operate at the crisis pregnancy centers where, yes, honey, we will be happy to provide you with that evaluation. Let's see. We've got an opening on the calendar about 14 weeks from now. See? Isn't it charming? Aren't these evangelical fundamentalist followers of Christ something else? because there's a presumption, and you heard it there. There is a presumption that a young female who happens to be pregnant, not by choice, and sometimes by violence and incest and things like that, there's a presumption in representing Harris's mind, and I'm sure him and Marcia just sit there talking to each other across the pillars every evening about how Jesus worries about the aborting of Uncle Daddy's precious little babies. Remember, a legislator here in West Virginia recently declared that rape and incest babies are a precious gift from God. Carol noting, Bob, I'm a-thinking representing Harris didn't see any connection between what he did and what he's proposing, because them little demon-infested girl children weren't breeding age yet. Well, how you gonna know until you try, right? And hence what the new daddy done. He's just trying to prevent another abortion. Right. So, a young woman, pregnant, not wanting to be, has no guarantee under this legislation that her mental health proceeding, the counseling session, the evaluation and counseling session required by the law will be done with any degree of alacrity so that she can actually hope to receive an abortion as she prefers and desires. And as is, and I don't want to put too fine a point on this, her right. Her right to manage the workings of her reproductive system are not infringed by Justin Harris's concern that somehow Uncle Daddy or the rapist will be put out, put off, inconvenienced, upset. Because you know how it is with rapists. They get their victim pregnant, and then they sit around, sometimes in prison, more often than not, sit around wondering about that precious little baby that they created by violent force. Yeah. And hint, all rape is by violent force. If it's rape, it's by violent force. And hence obviating the need for any further repig-licking discussions of what constitutes legitimate versus illegitimate rape. Right? Yeah. The right to an abortion really is a constitutional right, no matter how much these precious followers of the Prince of Peace protest that it ain't. So, naturally, again, Justin Harris is not a little greasy spot in the middle of the floor of the Arkansas General Assembly, having been struck down by an invisible sky being who despises liars and hypocrites. Nope, sorry. Just wanted to make sure we got that out there. Nice group gathering into the chat room this here Friday on the front porch. Good evening, Ralphs. And good evening, Stockton Larry and Texas D and Ron up in Canada. Right. Email coming in from our dear friend Luda. Luda says, subject line, Uncle Daddy. And I'm not lying when I say that I have heard that phrase uttered. I really have. You walk up to the, and you walk into the yard, and a little kid comes out, and you say, is your daddy home? And he says, turns in just a minute, and runs into the house hollering, Uncle Daddy! I heard it. Luda asks, so Bob, what's this dumbass's idea for the law pertaining to the rapist's parental rights? What idea? I mean, he's the father, ain't he? And the baby is a precious little rape, gift from God via rape. He's the daddy. Kevin in Colorado noting, Bob, in the Arkenstan representing case, it's I-O-K-I-Y-A-C-R. Do I really need to explain what that means? No, I'm presuming the C stands for Christian. Or maybe we could make it I-O-K-I-Y-A-M-R. It's okay if you're a male Republican. Update on spring and on the vernal equinox. Technically, it's actually slightly more than 12 hours long because of the diameter of the sun. Daylight is measured from the tip of the sun rising to the tip of the sun setting. So it's not quite symmetrical. Thank you, Randy. So we've got that going for us, which is good. Meanwhile, a tale... No. Let's put it this way. You may have noticed that, what was it, Wednesday? Because... while we were in the doctor's office yesterday, I also noticed that Zerubbabel Jones and her pals over there on Outnumbered on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, they were having a hissy about this too. That one in our White House, you know, the Kenyan Muslim usurper. It turns out that he made some remarks the other day in which he suggested that it would be really neat if everybody who was able to vote voted. Yes. The secret Muslim, because we know he is, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Said that if everybody who could vote would vote, we could transform this country, and that it would be a great way of getting money out of politics. I don't think these are, either of them, false statements. And somewhere along in there, I didn't read the entire transcript, but there was probably... another of those annoying references to our democracy. You know, our imaginary, non-existent democracy. Our democracy that was never intended to be a democracy. Our democracy that has never been a democracy. Our democracy that is aspirational and certainly not operational. But a reference to our democracy. This then made the folks over there at Outnumbered, including Hezekiah McGee and all her other friends, right upset. And apparently has made no small number, based on what I saw over at Charlie Pierce's blog earlier today, has made some other people about right-wingers about half out of their mind. What? Everybody vote! Well, the Kenyan Muslim usurpers trying to turn us into a communist dictatorship by letting everybody vote! You know where else everybody voted? I'll take a minute to let the chat room fill in the blank, and everybody listening at home and in cars and wherever holler, Germany! Iraq! In the Iraq, such as, right? But it's a pretty simple statement. And then he went on and I might note for the benefit of Robert in Australia and all our other Australian friends, he went on to note that there is mandatory voting in Australia, and that there's no one running through the streets screaming about how unfree they are because everybody has to vote. This drove the right wing, can't drive them somewhere where they already are. This just elicited more crazy from the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters. Did I mention baggers? Yeah. Libertarians, repiglicans in general. All hooting about how the voting is a precious right and so is not voting, and you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice, and that kind of stuff. A bunch of happy libertarian hogwash, in other words. Imagine that. Voting, suggesting that everybody should vote, inflames the right wing into paroxysms of faux righteous fury. And why not? Everybody voting guarantees the ultimate demise of the Republican Party. The only way they have been able to cling to power at all is to dummy up voting districts and try to keep people away from the polls. There's a reason that it is conventional political wisdom that on Election Day in November, and why isn't it in July? There's conventional wisdom that bad weather favors Republicans and good weather favors Democrats. Because the fewer people vote, the more likely it is that there will be a Republican victory, given the fact that a Republican, by God, will get out there and go to the polls and support right, and this is especially true of, you know, the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, and booger eaters. It doesn't matter if it's raining frogs and locusts. They, by God, will go and vote in their nice, safe, welcoming white polling places. If, on the other hand, you have to stand in line for hours on end in South Florida or Cleveland or certain parts of, well, you get the idea. If you have to drive 45 minutes to find your polling place in certain quadrants of Mississippi Stan or Alabama Stan, well, that's just freedom. Right? Yeah, the right wing had an absolute poop hemorrhage over that one. He's a communist dictator, he's destroying my country. Remember the Virginia footsore or Ellisore or what it sounds like, something, yeah, it's a servant of Saruman. Hooting over there in South Carolina. And by the way, a little, because there's been a little talk back and forth, a little reminder. Virginia Ellisore and her screaming about communist dark-skinned dictators, that's not something that we should fool ourselves into saying, well, you know, that's South Carolina, they're that way there. It's true. It is South Carolina, and they are that way there. But nobody knows this better than our friends in Iowegia, Barbie, others, Rob. That place is going to be crawling, like ants at a picnic, with people hollering about the communist dictator. And it may not even be a matter of, it will be crawling, may not even be future tense, may be present tense, already is crawling with people hooting like that. And they hoot like that in Alabama Stan, and they hoot like that in Indiana Stan, Talibandiana, and they damn sure hoot like that in Arkansas Stan, and Texas Stan, and Oklahoma Stan, and Lord knows, or Arizona stand. They hoot like that in the old Dominion of Virginia stand. So, just, you know, a word to the wise is sufficient. But anyway, the other side of the coin of our democracy. Now, being an East Coast type and an Appalachian type, I have no idea what it must be like to live in a state where you have, say, the concept of referendum and recall, where any old yahoo with any old idea who is willing to put forth enough effort can get just about anything put on the ballot. California is such a state. I'm told that in California there are you can routinely see professional signature harvesters at work who are getting paid for getting people to sign on to various and sundry different ballot referendums. It makes me wonder what a ballot in California must look like. Proposition 9512. A proposition for the purpose that all people in California shall eat their toast butter side up. Proposition 9513. A proposition stating that all people eating their toast butter side up shall accept vegans who refuse to eat butter. Proposition 9514. A proposition declaring butter to be cruelty. You get the idea. In many ways, the people and referendum and recall enters the American political landscape out of the best of intentions. And it enters the political landscape in primarily the Western states, where rugged individualism means freedom. Right? Yeah. We don't want any communities out here on the wide open range spaces. Damn sheepers. Right? Well, they've got them a bit of a quandary in California, because they've got them a brand new referendum that's pretty much going to have to go on the ballot. And the Attorney General of California is Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris, as the Attorney General, is charged as part of her duties with titling and preparing for balloting all ballot initiatives. Okay, makes sense. I mean, you don't want something like that done by the county surveyor. No slur upon the science of survey, but attorneys general are adept in the legalish use of words. Enter Huntington Beach, California attorney Matthew McLaughlin. Back in February, he scraped up the $200 filing fee and submitted a proposal for a proposition on the California ballot in which he proposed the creation of a law called the Sodomite Suppression Act. Attorney Matthew McLaughlin wrote, "The abominable crime against nature known as buggery, also called sodomy, is a monstrous evil that Almighty God, giver of freedom and liberty, commands us to suppress on pain of our utter destruction, even as he overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah." Later on, Matthew McLaughlin said that any person, this is part of the proposition, any person who willingly touches another person of the same gender for purposes of sexual gratification should be put to death by bullets to the head or by any other convenient method. Now, don't worry, this is not going to show up on your ballot. But that does not change the duty of the Attorney General of California, because upon receipt of the fee and request, the Attorney General will prepare a circulating title and summary, which will be the official summary of the initiative measure. Now, it's highly likely that, again, Matthew McLaughlin will never see this initiative go on to the ballot. But Kamala Harris still has to do her constitutional duty with regard to circulating the official summary of the measure. I guess this is what gets put on the professional signature harvesters board so that they can go and harvest the signatures. What is this? Well, insofar as she is, Kamala Harris is understood to be the front runner to be the Democratic nominee for the Senate seat being vacated by Barbara Harris, it might be a clever little piece of typical right-wing rat fuckery. You might remember that term was invented, or at least brought to national consciousness during the Watergate era, as it was practiced by the folks there who were members of CREEP, the Committee to Re-Elect the President. In other words, Nixon's henchmen. It refers to political pranksterism that puts an opponent in a bad light no matter how they try to work their way out of it. The infamous Canuck letter was an exemplar of such, as was used against Maine Senator Edmund Muskie. Oh my God, did I say Barbara Harris? I'm so sorry, Marty. Barbara Boxer. Sometimes I just get slain in the spirit. Where did I get Kamala Harris, Barbara Boxer. Sorry. Oy. But beyond the fact that it may be political rat fuckery, this opens the opportunity for an interesting political dialogue, or an interesting dialogue on the nature of politics. Because this is democracy. Ballot initiative process is an attempt to inject some semblance of democracy into the process. It is, of course, corrupted by money. Everything in politics in the United States is corrupted by money. But it is. And $200 filing fee, and you too can have an initiative circulated for consideration in California. What is interesting is the response to this. Among other things, the guy, and for all we know, he's a right-wing POS. Matthew McLaughlin of Huntington Beach, the lawyer, who submitted this. Well, there are, first of all, there are people who are justifiably outraged by such a vicious, vile, hate-filled statement as he made, suggesting that anyone who is gay should be put to death by bullets to the head or by any other convenient method. That's terrifying. It is, I think one might cogently argue, hate speech. But people who are offended by this are filing bar complaints against Matthew McLaughlin, saying that he should be stripped of his right and his license to practice law in the state of California because of what he has done here, when he has not in any way, shape, form, or fashion violated any law whatsoever. In fact, he has scrupulously followed the letter of the law. The spirit, well, that's the problem with the spirit of the law. It isn't clearly discernible necessarily by writing on paper. That's something you argue in between shots of old Panther piss at 5 o'clock on Fridays. Or at least lawyers do. So then, the question. What is so great about democracy? Now, this is one of those moments when it's good that we don't invite and do not have right-wingers in our midst, because you'd immediately have a chorus of "Baruga, baruga!" He doesn't love democracy. He doesn't love Jesus. He ain't American. Right? But, I mean, this really is. It's democracy, isn't it? And when I first saw this last night after the program, the first thing that came to my mind was, this is what democracy does. Okay, so the guy is a right-wing religion industry nut. He has a history. He tried to get a ballot measure back in 2004 that would mandate every public school student in California be provided with a Bible for literary purposes. So what? Democracy cherishes its nuts, does it not? It was the Athenian democracy, the first exemplar of the form, in fact, the Athenian democracy, that said, hey, that's Socrates. You know, everybody got together there in the I don't know, on the field of Mars or the Areopagus or some amphitheater or who knows what. And as often as not in the Athenian democracy, those democratic meetings turned into discussions of who they hate, of who the mob hated the most. Because democracy is, in fact, mob rule. Now, when the mob got together in ancient Athens, they would get little potsherds, little pieces of broken pottery, and they'd get a rock. And they would have ballot initiatives in which they wrote down the name of the Athenian that they hated the most, and would throw it into a pot and count them all out, and whoever got the most votes got ostracized from Athens, exiled. And they ostracized some pretty famous damn people. Was Pericles ostracized? Or did he just go die in the plague before they could? It's too far in the dim and misty past. But they ostracized generals. And the reason it's called ostracization is because those little broken hunks of pottery in Greek are ostracon, ostrakoi. That means little broken piece of pottery in Greek, I think. And then, when it got down to the... And the reason I mention this is because this is pretty close to a one-to-one comparison that pesky Socrates was wandering around with this group of groupies, among them a broad-shouldered fellow who got the nickname of Platon, Plato, who... And you know what? Back then, to write down everything somebody was saying took a lot of work. That's a lot of pottery sherds. But he was walking around taking down everything that Socrates said. And Socrates was saying some things that the Athenian democracy didn't much like. He was encouraging people to question the existence of the gods, among other things. He was asking, what is truth? What is beauty? What is love? What, indeed, is justice? And it was bad enough that people were listening to him, but the mob, you know, the democracy in Athens, couldn't help noticing that the people who, many of the people who were listening to him were young people. It's probably unfair to Socrates, but it's hard to avoid a comparison, say, with young people in the United States who think that cranky old Uncle Ron Paul is a really nifty, neato, keen, groovy, hip kind of cat. And if we could all just have a gold standard currency, we could all just and free dope. But Socrates became a self-inflicted thorn in the side of the Athenian mob, the democracy. And so they said, you know what we need to do? We should probably have him killed. And so, just as in California in 2015, way back in the 4th century BCE, it was the 4th century, wasn't it? The dates all run together after a while. The Athenian mob got together and somebody introduced an initiative that said, let's kill Socrates. And somebody said, well, I think it's a noble idea, but don't we need a reason? And somebody else said, well, yeah, he is corrupting the youth. In other words, they were complaining, the complaint was that young people were listening to Socrates' arguments and that was bad for business. You can, since he was said to be fomenting impiety, you can well imagine the priest of Apollo, or the priest of Zeus, or the priest of the temple of Athena the Virgin. Yeah, Athena Parthenos? Yeah, right. Yeah, Athena the Virgin. Parthenon? Saying, well, Rumpf! Oh, yeah, he's encouraging impiety. And we shall bring down upon us the wrath of the gods if we do not kill Socrates right quick. And the mob said, Rumpf! 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 And the next thing you know, they had themselves an initiative and a referendum, and they recalled Socrates. and said, "Here, drink this." It is said that Socrates' words were, "Oh yeah, years now. Socrates, what is love? Socrates, what is truth? Socrates, what is beauty?" Not once did you say, "Hey Socrates, hemlock is poison." Bad joke. But this is that. And for my part, I will say shame on the people who are trying to disbar this freak for simply doing what democracy is. Do they think that by disbarring this goober and taking away his livelihood, that they're going to stop him from filing this kind of hateful nuttiness? Because if they do think that, they're really, really stupidly wrong. And then there's an open question. You know, just because this guy's a right-wing religious lunatic, he's apparently a solo practitioner, what if it turns out this guy periodically represents indigent Californians oppressed by forces larger than they themselves? What if he represents criminal defendants who have no means of obtaining representation? What if he does good things with that law degree? So maybe there's just gonna be one less lawyer doing those good things? I know. California's full of lawyers. Nobody'll miss one less lawyer. But I think, and maybe I'm in trouble here. I just think that if we're going to go on and on about our democracy and pronounce the words, they're fantasy, it's fantasy and it's not real, but pronounce the words as if it should be attended by some heavenly chorus of the angels on high singing, "Oh, our democracy." Then we damned well better be willing to live with its consequences. And these are those consequences. Do you give a pass to a hateful jackass who wants gay people shot for how they love each other? No, you don't give him a pass for that. You take him apart on those grounds. And in fact, our side, reacting this way, calling for him to be disbarred over a clearly legal act, well, it's another case of us forming up the firing squad in a nice tight circle, pointing across the circle and waiting for somebody to yell, "Fire!" Because it makes us look like, I don't know, a little bit malice. So, that. All right then. It is about 10 minutes past the hour. And it's well past time we fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and get started in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the Front Porch. And I want to send out thanks to Ron. Ron has taken us down now to only $150 to go for fundraising on the evening. Thank you very kindly, Ron. And hopefully in the next hour and 50 minutes, we can get the rest of the way. I can't believe I said Barbara Harris. Jesus. Wait a minute. Yeah. I earned that one. Now I've got a little, I've got the imprint of an Electric Voice RE20 windscreen on my forehead.
Don't!
So let's fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Let's fire up the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676, and get this here extraordinary, ordinary roundtable going. It's Friday on the front porch, on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I had something else queued up at the time, but somehow Black Sabbath's classic, The Mob Rules, fit ever so well there. It is Friday on the front porch, 14 minutes past the hour on this Friday, the 20th day of March. First day of spring has sprung as of about 29 minutes ago. Hot diggity. And let's get the horn bat signal is lighted. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you?
Of course, you know spring started here in February.
Well, yes. So, you know, it's nice, though, because this means that Gerald can put the Shut It Sparky machine away, maybe. Of course, there's no guarantee here that we won't wind up with a foot of snow 2 weeks from now. Climate change.
Shut it, Bob.
Okay, I earned that one, Gerald.
Yes, you did. Yes.
And let's see, good evening to Carol Abel in Australia.
Hello, Bob. How are you doing?
Better, I think. It seems like I've been looking forward to this day for 3 months, and I think I have.
And you'll be able to sleep without being so cold.
Well, hopefully pretty soon I'll be able to sleep without breathing coal smoke. That's my ambition.
Yeah, that too.
Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker.
Hola, señor.
¿Qué tal?
Yo, bien, ¿y tú?
Ah, muy bueno, muy bueno.
And now for the bilingual portion of the program.
Well, exactly, and that's about as much as I'm good for. ¿Dónde está la cerveza? Okay, I got that one, too. And one of these days I hope to use ¿Dónde está la pulquería? I still have never tasted pulque, and that's an ambition. It's on the list.
The only thing I know is Sawadi. That's Thai for hello.
That'll get you a long way in Thailand, maybe. I don't know. By the way, I'm proud to announce that I have seen the photograph of Barbie's little puppy to be, and he is a cute little fella.
Isn't it just the sweetest thing?
Oh, he looks.
Not too many things make me all melty, but that did it.
Oh yeah, I mean this. So she had mentioned maybe we need to start some sort of pool for naming rights or something.
Well, I kind of discouraged her against naming him until he gets back and kind of tells us what his name should be.
Right,
let
exactly.
His personality dictate those things.
Well, and I think that's wise. But I'm so it'll be what another 7 or 8 weeks before she can welcome him into Shea Barbie.
Yes, he's just a week old, but she's going to get pictures, update pictures every week.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
She'll be sharing. She's a happy camper, and if my sister's happy, I'm happy.
We like for Barbie to be happy. Anything that will occasionally generate the stereo effect of Betty Rubble laughing. Yeah, you know, we're all for that here.
I think Gerald probably gets the shudders when he hears that because usually we're picking on him.
And let's
easy target, right?
Well,
do what?
An easy target.
Well, slow moving, fish in a barrel sort of thing.
You know what, Carol Baker? You keep this up and you're going to be struck down!
When the Lord attacks.
while my novitiate apprentice, Fred, tempts God, I'll be back here in the studio. Right. What would that, Mutual of Omaha's Divine Kingdom.
We'll have to get that video out for everyone. All the Hornedanistas.
Struck down, you mean?
Yeah, well.
Yes.
It's actually titled When the Lord Attacks.
Oh, I need to see that.
I will get that. I'll just put that up on the Horn Facebook page. How's that?
That would be perfect. That would work very, very well, Gerald. And by the way, good evening, Gerald.
Good evening.
And I see, Larry, are you with us?
Larry is with you. But Larry is going, I'm with you. I'm going to be listening.
Hello, Larry is with us always. Yes.
My routine is beginning.
Okay, so, very good. So you go to Radio Silence and just be listening, and we'll be ready for you when you're ready to come back.
Thank you.
Good deal.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Larry.
And let's jump over to the Gizmo line and welcome in Kevin. And I presume Bill as well.
You presume correctly. And congratulations to West Virginia.
We made it past the first round. Now, we have to be careful. I haven't gotten a note from our buddy Scott in Sweden as to whether or not we need to watch what we say about the tournament. But I think it's safe to say, yes, the Mountaineers advanced in the first round. Beating SUNY Buffalo, and will now face the winner of Valparaiso and Maryland. Is that right? And that game is underway right now.
I believe, yes. I was pretty proud of Hampton last night. They only lost by 20 to Kentucky. I was figuring at least 40.
So you want to know what it's like to be a Mountaineer fan? I'll explain. And I'm sure people are going, oh, no, they're going to talk about sports. They're so shallow. This is what it's like to be a Mountaineer fan. You dream of the day, because the Mountaineers have won a couple of national championships back in the dim and distant past, before I was born. But you dream of the day when maybe the Mountaineers will be a number one seed. And then you realize that no number 16 seed has ever beaten a number one seed in the big dance in March. And then it descends on you like a sense of doom that if, in fact, West Virginia is ever a number one seed in the tournament, every Mountaineer fan will have to live in gut-bending trepidation of the idea that West Virginia, yes, WVU, the mighty Mountaineers, will become the first team ever to be run out of the tournament by a number 16 seed. That's what it's like to be a Mountaineer fan.
Well, my whole problem with the thing, Bob, it's become such a business, this tournament. All the bars and I hear advertised on sports talk, come on, we got 80,000 television sets and we're selling this kind of food that will taste good and will kill you. All the stuff I like to eat, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's
I'm not a bad basketball guy, you know.
I'm a victim of marketing where that's concerned. I think it's great fun to be in a bar with a lot of TVs, and especially the first couple of rounds of the tournament. And be able to watch, you know, four or five games at the same time.
True.
And good evening, Kevin.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Got you just fine.
Good. I got you on speaker, so that's why I was wondering.
Nice and crisp, at least in my headphones.
Sorry for interrupting. You spoke up. To tell y'all, I got an upgrade to my computer. I'm hoping to be back on Skype within the next 3 weeks. I got some bugs I still got to work out.
Oh, that's amazing! So you did get a little bit of help along the way.
Not really help. They just upgraded me because of all the problems with the last version, and the upgrade seems to be working except for the minor little bugs and glitches, but it's got the Skype feature on there, and so once we get all the bugs worked out, I'll work on getting back on Skype. So, but from what they say with this version, it should be compatible for it. So,
that's good news. And hey, we have a brand new addition to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Ralps is with us.
Hi, y'all.
Hey, welcome, hey. Welcome to the conversation. Tickled to see you.
Yeah, I'm attempting to type something and I don't know how to get it to actually show up.
It will.
So maybe y'all could help me.
Yeah, there's a little box, like a little talk balloon down there. Have you got your chat dialogue open?
Yeah.
And I guess the real question is, what kind of platform are you on?
I'm on my iPad.
Okay, I'm on an iPad, so in the little chat box, it should say, type a message here.
Yeah, there is like a little message bar. But then I don't know how to get it to actually show up. Like with a little smiley on the corner?
Yes. If you just tap maybe, where it says type a message here,
yeah,
your keyboard should pop up.
Yeah, it did. And
okay.
I typed in.
Go ahead and type your message. Type your message and hit send at the end of the bar.
There isn't, there's just a little smiley. There's
if
not
you,
a send.
If you tap the bar and your keyboard pops up, the send will appear.
Mm.
don't want.
And if it doesn't, I'm going to have to give you more remedial help than I can give you right now.
Okay. It doesn't. So.
But the help is available.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just remember, you know, nobody here can break the internet, we think.
Right.
Because yeah. Lord knows we've tried.
Yeah, but I'm also watching the Maryland game for what that's worth.
You got an update for me? Because I'm not.
Maryland is leading by 4.
How much time?
Let me see. A minute left.
Ooh.
At 65-61.
Well, you know, for a 4-13 matchup, that's a little closer than maybe Maryland would like.
Yep.
And I can imagine our buddy Tosh is probably watching with bated breath because he's a Maryland alum. I just had a note from Ron in Raleigh, who is rooting the Cavaliers along, noting that UVA kicked Belmont's butt to go 30-3, the third 30-win season in school history. Could be a fun. Here's something fun. I'm probably going to spoil it for Scott, but dadgummit, Scott, you're just going to have to deal. I read somewhere that after yesterday, there are only 3.9% of brackets still unbusted.
Shit.
Yesterday was hard.
But I will predict that Kentucky will not be the first team to go 40-0.
Really? You're that confident, huh?
Yeah, because when you're on win streaks like that, for that many games, there's got to be an off, you know, I don't think, they've got the talent to do it. It's just a matter of, will they run into a team like Virginia or whomever who's just about as good?
Well, the funniest thing I heard was there was a player who was huge, had a big night last night, and his name is BJ Ayu. How's that one? Because they were making, the one show was just working on that thing all morning, and, you know. And then there's a Detroit Tiger, his last name is Pancake. And they worked that over real
well. You know that name Pancake is that's actually an old West Virginia name, Bill.
I'll be darned.
A lot of pancakes here. One of the finest young writers West Virginia ever produced, and whose life ended tragically short, is a guy named Brees DJ Pancake, and he only produced one volume of short stories, but they are pure brilliance.
The last joke that had me rolling was that he can retire to Upper Michigan and build a log cabin, as in log cabin syrup.
Yes.
I mean, there was just one pun after another until the point I had a hard time getting off the floor. You know, my sense of humor is still warped. You know.
And healthily so, I might add.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at the brackets now. Kentucky will play Cincinnati, and the winner of that game will play the winner of WVU and I presume Maryland. Although Valpo has been responsible for the occasional miracle. And, you know, there's a history there between the Mountaineers and Kentucky. Kentucky used to have an invitational, and WVU was invited to play routinely. This is back during the really nasty racist reign of Adolph Rupp, for whom the grateful denizens of Kentucky named their arena. Yeah, because nothing says marching boldly into the future like naming your arena after a basketball coach who was everything short of a Klansman.
How the hell did he work with modern basketball players?
Oh, he couldn't. He couldn't. I mean, you know, he's long dead. But no, WVU would be invited to play in the Kentucky Classic, and I forget if it was Jerry West or Hot Rod Hundley, but it was that era, and they went, and the Mountaineers went in and just devastated Kentucky. And after the game, Adolph Rupp went up to one of them and said, "Son, you beat old Uncle Adolph, and when he was down, you beat him some more." And West Virginia never got invited to that class, that tournament again.
Well, I know Paul Brown and the dean of the All-America Football Conference, there was a team in Miami, and they told Paul to leave his black players in Cleveland. And he refused, he brought them down, and they played. That was in the 40s when the All-America Football Conference was 46 to 4, 7, 8, and 9, and then they folded, and the Browns and the 49ers came into the National Football League at that point.
I was proud to have known personally Sylvester Croom, who was the first black coach at Ole Miss.
No, Mississippi State.
Oh, Mississippi State, yeah. And there's a thing on ESPN about him getting the job there and his time there.
Oh, that's a really, really good documentary in that ESPN series.
Yes. And I got to know him back when he was in Alabama as an assistant for Ray Perkins.
Yeah.
Back in Alabama. I ran a shoe store then, and he used to come in and buy Florsheim shoes from me.
Oh, back when Florsheim shoes were good shoes?
Yeah. Yeah.
I watch it. I own a couple pairs of those things.
If you got them when they were American made,
yeah,
they probably lasted you till now because they were.
Well, I couldn't find any Stetsons to buy because the idea was when you played up, occasionally I'd be hired to play a wedding or some other, some other event where we had to dress like human beings and, you know, so. I did the best I could, anyhow. No blue jeans and boots, you know.
Sparky, I interrupted you a while back. What were you going to say?
No, nothing. As usual. What I'm going to say is, I'm not hearing from the other folks on the. I'm alive here. I enjoy listening as much as I do talking, that's for sure.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt the basketball brackets.
Me neither.
Did you guys happen to see what Organizing for America did? You know, Barack Obama's group with their brackets for the climate change deniers?
No, that sounds wonderful.
That does sound good.
They had they're down to the finalists now. It's a money making thing. If you vote on it, you get your email and everything, and then they sent me an email the other day. I got to check, see what the finalists are.
Jim Imhoff, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say he's got to be an odds on. Oh, here it is.
It's Jim Inhofe versus Marco Rubio. Those are the finals.
Yeah, let's see. The first round, then the embarrassing eight, the flunk science four, and the denial finals.
Well, I knew Jim Inhofe would be in the championship.
Yep.
The senator with a snowball. That made him move right to the head of the line.
But you know what? It absolutely does. But the New York Times had a story today. See how you guys open doors? The New York Times had a story today, and I tweeted it and Facebooked it because it was well worth the read. Mitch McConnell, another notorious denialist, Mitch McConnell has done something fairly unheard of. He's, of course, the majority leader of the Senate, which gives him more power than, say, Senator Snowball. He is fronting a group which is encouraging politicians at the state and county level to oppose and resist, and I guess if need be, refuse to follow EPA regulations. You know, we had the story last night about Senator Manchin's CASE Act, Clean Air, Secure Economy, Strong Economies, Clean Air, Strong Economies. God, that man makes me ill. Well, his pal, Mitch McConnell, is offering up what the New York Times called a legal blueprint for governors to follow to stop the rules being implemented in their states. And one of the most fascinating parts of this article is that it does something articles seldom do. It actually names the person who behind the political figure who is running all of this. And in this case, the poisoning and the destruction of our country and perhaps many others via climate change now has a face. And that guy's name is Neil Chatterjee. And he's coordinating lawyers, lobbying firms, and doing everything in his power to make sure that the United States hastens the harm caused by global warming. Neil Chatterjee.
Is he a coke sucker?
Oh, well, is Mitch McConnell?
Yeah.
Well, by definition. And they have hired. In fact, I mentioned this guy on the program not too long back as one of the preeminent constitutional scholars in the United States, Harvard University's Lawrence Tribe. Well, they've hired Lawrence Tribe, McConnell has, to put forward the argument that Kenyan Muslim usurper dictator is setting fire to the Constitution. That's what they're claiming. He set fire to the Constitution. And, of course, they're funded by, coal, oil, and gas.
Well, that's the kind of language the rubes like to hear.
I also have a ballot initiative story if you want to hear it.
Oh, sure.
Okay, you remember California's new grocery bag law?
Yeah.
Well, I go to the grocery store this one day, and my sister, as a joke for like Christmas, birthday, or something, she sent me all these, the shopping bags that you can buy. They're not taken to the grocery store all the time. They're, they're like canvas bags or something else. She sent me a bunch of those. So I'm going in the grocery store. I got my shopping cart already from the parking lot, or as you guys call it back, buggy. And I'm going into the store, and this guy is sitting there, and he goes, "Sir, would you like to sign this initiative?" And I said, "What's it for?" And he says, to repeal the grocery bag law. And I just picked up all those bags in my cart. I says, "Does this look like I want to sign that?" And I just laughed. It was almost like, "Here's your sign, dude." But now, since there's this initiative, they got enough signatures, so it's going to go on the ballot. They put it off implementing it.
What do you think they pay these morons to stand there and do that?
Oh, they get paid by the signature. Whatever it is, I don't know. A buck or 50 cents, I don't know.
Well, speaking of here's your sign, did you see the bake sale that the girls had at Sandy High School in Utah?
No.
Yeah, they made up a bunch of chocolate chip cookies, batches and batches of chocolate chip cookies, put two in a bag, laid them all out on a table and put up a sign, and it said, boys, a dollar. Girls, 77 cents.
How did that go over?
And, yeah, it went over like a fart in church, but I thought it was very well done.
I think that's
classy. Lovely. Classy. I like that.
I thought it was smart. I mean, to raise awareness about income inequality, especially just forget about class, gender. Yeah. And naturally, the boys were very upset.
Really? Yes. Wow. Right-wing boys will get upset about most anything, won't they?
Teenage boys will get very upset about almost anything.
Who's got the wildcat?
That's Crook. He wants his dinner.
Okay, do you know how to... Can you mute your microphone when you're not talking?
Yeah, or I don't... Do I just turn the phone off?
No, you just hit the little microphone button, just tap it, and a little bar will go across it.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. We're givers.
Tech support has never been this much fun.
Indeed. But my other favorite story that came out today, which wasn't a favorite story at all, as you can imagine, PiCapify in Raleigh, North Carolina, mm-hmm. at NC State University. Apparently, a frat was suspended over a notebook that had some disturbing entries in it on rape and lynching, and it was all about what these boys would do to pledge to this fraternity. One little quote said, "It will be short and painful, just like when I rape you." And they've apparently burned the books and taken it all down off of social media and taken it down everywhere. And Pi Kappa Phi's national organization said it decided to put the NC chapter on interim suspension while it investigates the pledge book, which, as you can imagine, no longer exists.
What pledge book? What pledge book?
A pledge book that was kept.
But they burned it. So,
you know. Yeah, you got it. Sorry, I'm slow. The quotes in the book are reprehensible and unacceptable. We have sent staff to Raleigh to investigate the circumstances. The National Fraternity's CEO said in a statement, "These statements are inconsistent with the values of Pi Kappa Phi and
bullshit.
Will not be tolerated."
Yeah, bullshit.
See, and that was my response. I said, "You see, that's kind of the problem. Those are exactly the values of Pi Kappa Phi and a whole lot of other Greek organizations nationwide. And once they start accepting that that's more the norm and not an anomaly, we can address the actual, you know, problem."
Yeah, but see, the national and international, for those who have, like, Canadian chapters, HQ, they have an institutional picture of their fraternity that is wildly at odds with the reality of their chapter-to-chapter operations.
Absolutely.
Because, see, if you get to be the executive director and publisher of the official fraternity magazine, you've got a pretty nice life. I mean, you know, you're not making Creflo Dollar money, but you've got a pretty nice life. You know, you're not making minimum wage by any stretch of the imagination. And and the people who rise into that hierarchy are people from the fraternity who have been the best and brightest cream of the crop types from the best of the best of the best, sir, Men in Black reference, chapters. And then you have the other chapters, the SAEs at OU. You know, I'm sure that there are SAEs and SAE chapters that are the very absolutely best there are, you know, on campus. But they are the exception and not the rule. And that's why somebody like me who came out of that system can look at it and say, hey, you know, it's become an anachronism. It's time to go. But the problem is, Carol, they're sitting on buckets of money.
Yeah. And another woman had mentioned to me, she said, I think one of the reasons so many older men want to deny the behaviors is that they did the same things when they were younger, and that would make their own behavior come under fire. Well, I'm not so sure that's exactly right, because, you know, 35 years ago when I was in college, Bob, frat boys misbehaved, but it was nothing like this on my campus. I mean, I knew that I could have too much to drink and crash on the couch of any member of Sigma Nu, any member of Lambda Chi, and I didn't have a thing to worry about. I'm not sure that I would have felt that way at the Phi Tau house or a couple of other places, because they were a little rowdier bunches. But these were really decent guys. But it was a different time. I mean, feminism was really kind of coming on strong. Roe v. Wade had just passed. We'd just gotten through the turbulent 60s, so I think everybody was a little more socially conscious about gender and race and that kind of thing. And we did have a really unusually high number of international students at our school. So I think a guy walking around being one of, you know, a chest-beating knuckle-dragger who thought he had the right to drag his woman around by the hair would have been shamed back then. So, yeah, I think times have changed, and not for the better.
I think that's undeniably true. However, you know, I entered a fraternity in 1981, the fall of 1981, became an active, got initiated, whatever, in the second semester, winter of 1982, and, you know, there was hazing. The various houses would, some hazed worse than others, and everybody had these rumors about, you know, what happened. But, you know, you'd know how bad it was. For instance, one of the things that they were known for on this little tiny campus in Missouri where I went to college was something called lineups. And that's where the pledge class, all the pledges would be called together at, you know, 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning after everybody had gone to sleep, and they'd be marched down to the house, and the active brothers would yell at them and scream at them while they stood in line. There were other forms of hazing, none of which was good. And all of these national fraternities, they have written policies. We do not haze. And, of course, the chapters continue to haze. Because while...
Well, they had to do that after, you know, more than a couple of guys died.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and there's a few that die every year. I mean, and there are really stupid deaths. For instance, schools out west, in the Northwest, not just there, but a lot of these fraternity houses are old, ramshackle, falling down, poorly maintained fire traps. And they've got other liability issues like sleeping porches. And people have rolled out third-story windows to their death. You know, not even drunk, just stupid negligence. What we're talking about right now are nasty instances of misogyny and racism, the forced consumption of alcohol and young men dying of alcohol poisoning. Shit, that happens once or twice a year, it seems like.
We had a close call when I was in college with alcohol poisoning with one of the frat guys. And I was at that party, and they were drinking Everclear.
Yeah, that's not surprising. And you know, like you said, you could get drunk and pass out at the Lamb Chop house and wouldn't have a problem. I think that was mostly the case with the fraternity where I was. You know, we threw parties back then. You know, we'd throw parties where there'd be 100 kegs, but God Almighty, there'd be 5,000 people.
Yeah.
And 100 kegs don't go very far. You know, we'd throw our arguably racist themed party in the spring, and we would make 40 gallon. We bought brand new garbage cans, mind you. but 40 gallon garbage cans full of punch. And the girls from the sororities and everything would come up and you want some punch? No, my big sister told me not to drink y'all's punch. I'm just going to eat the fruit. Okay. Because the fruit had been soaking, you know, sitting in the punch for.
I figured.
Yeah. Okay. You want the strawberries, grapes? How about a little? You know, how about a little cantaloupe? But you know what? It's looking back, even that was dangerous, Carol.
But tame by today's standards.
Absolutely tame.
Which is frightening.
You know, some of the brothers, like, you know, me, were thrilled, you know, not thrilled, but much more inclined to retreat to the room, close the door, put the towel under the door, put the dryer sheet into the paper towel tube, and sit around and just get blissfully stoned to the what's the line from Caddyshack? Stoned to the bejesus belt, which rendered us pretty much, I would say, harmless.
Exactly.
And the
I think about the sheer volume of pot that was smoked my freshman year by me and all my friends, and we were rendered entirely harmless.
I got some new rub for my knees that my stepson brought me. It was made with marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, it works good.
I never heard of that.
It's a different strain. Doesn't have much THC. It's got a different kind of. I don't know. It's bred for that.
Do you hear the hum in the background?
Yeah, somebody's got a noise going. Who is it?
Wait a minute. That's on Bill and Kevin's line. Yeah, that's on you. That's on you guys' line, Kevin. Bill.
There's a fan going in the house, but it's not close to me.
Well, I'm hearing it too. So
must be. I can't hear the phone. Anything happen?
They're sounding really weak.
Yeah, they are. I don't. Hey, Kevin. If you don't mind, ring off and reestablish the connection, would you? All right. See. All right, good deal.
This is much better.
Okay, and that was all I had to say about that.
Roger's here.
Hey, Roger.
Hey, Roger.
Or he's just listening like Greg.
I'm going in.
Tim's supposed to join us in a bit. He said he was going to be at the dentist's office. Time we started.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Bob. Congrats on West Virginia.
Well, thank you kindly. Are your brackets working out?
What do you do, bitch?
Oh, you got to do bets.
That's such a hockey man.
Greg's a sports guy.
I'm kind of a sports guy. I don't really like basketball, but I will watch the tournament because I grew up with UCLA.
Yeah. Wait, football season, I thought you were a USC fan.
Well, I am. That's how it goes in L.A. USC football and UCLA basketball.
Oh my God! See, that's unheard of in a place like, say, you know, I don't know, Alabama. That's like being an Alabama fan in football and a Auburn fan in field hockey or something. Hey, until Kevin and Bill get back together, we got Jim in Louisiana stand for a little bit. What's happening, Jim?
Oh, not much, but. Give you a little call, see what's going on. Thinking about my misspent youth and, you know, in college and didn't really. I was more, you know, more the reefer. Not so much the fraternity guy. I just, maybe, you know, because I'm like 4 years younger than you, and it was just kind of. I think Animal House had a lot big, which came out right about then. But I just never got into the whole fraternity thing.
Well, like for I never even gave it a thought until I wound up because I started out at a little tiny liberal arts college in Missouri, where 97% of the student population was in one fraternity or another, and I didn't really care. But the thing is, if you were one of that 3% who weren't, you were just kind of damned to social isolation. Now, it's a much different story if, say, you know, you're on the 30,000 student Ohio State campus.
Right. Well, I went to UNO, University of New Orleans, and that's more of a commuter school. But, you know, I mean, maybe if I went up to LSU or something, or a bigger state school. But even then, I went to a couple of fraternity things, and I just didn't like the vibe, you know. It's just the counterculture gym coming out.
So, just out of curiosity, when did you go to UNO, Jim?
One of those extended careers. It started in 77. I think what the Animal House came out, because I think that kind of reignited fraternities and sororities a little bit, you know. And it seemed like, you know, you had the Vietnam War end, and then, you know, kind of the counterculture, but real quick it just went back to everything, went back to just more like, you know, partying and stuff. And since the Vietnam War wasn't an issue, they just went into, you know, the fraternity seemed to be the thing to do. But like I say, UNO was more of a commuter school, and I just never got into any fraternity that, you know, I could really identify with or whatever.
Well, the reason I asked is I started college, as I said, in 1981, and that's, you know, that's the rise of the Reagan years, and it's kind of a cusp situation because I think the 70s actually end with the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, and the whole hippie tie-dye whatever scene just dies. And the next thing you know, it's a totally different world.
That's definitely true. I mean, I could already feel it in like 79, 80. And, it just went totally back to, you know, Ronnie Reagan got in and everything.
Went to hell?
Went back. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, really, that's ultimately, that's kind of the long and the short of it. In America, looking back, we realize that with the arrival of Ronnie Reagan in the White House, everything, the whole country went to shit.
Exactly.
And it's not like we weren't warned. You know, when he kicked off his campaign, where the Klan got its start.
Exactly where he kicked it off at. I mean, it's almost like he may as well have had a Klan rally, you know? And I know a lot of people who, they yearn for that, that old, you know, the old time South. I can't stand it, you know? I guess that's why, one reason I was in my little way. Yeah, y'all are like my bastion of sanity.
Yes, Marky.
In 1977 marked the last year I went to college majoring on the GI Bill. Because I needed that $270 a month.
Of course, that's plus
I moonlighted as a bartender in a crazy ass beer and wine joint.
Well, that's back when college didn't cost the price of a home per year, right?
No, I was going to junior college too, Shasta College, right in Reading, which was a fun place to go in the 70s.
Speaking of price, I remember the first couple of semesters I went, tuition full course, 12 hours full course load, $211. And that's that counting books and stuff, but just
yeah, I think the cheapest college education in West Virginia right now is around $90 per credit hour. So a single course would run you nearly $300.
$80, yeah.
I had to carry 12 units to get to full GI Bill payment. I think it was like $12 a unit at the time. It was cheap. The books really cost you.
I mean, I went to a private Presbyterian college in Northeast Iowa. It was a nice school, but it was a private school. I didn't go to a state school, but I had academic scholarships. My tuition fees, room and board, for a year was $4,800.
Oh, Greg said it was $3, so that's what it probably was. It was cheap.
1963, Humboldt State University in Arcata, California, full load, $30 a semester, plus room, board, books, etc. But the college fees were $30 a semester for a full load.
How did they pay the teachers?
The state budget paid the teachers because the state at that time believed that an educated populace was important.
And then then Ronald Reagan came along and screwed up the whole
thing.
No shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's like my
sorry, I don't want to be on the same petition as the angry Indian, so I won't say shit anymore.
Oh, no, I think you should say it a lot more.
Yeah, well, I noticed that after it had been up there for 2 days, nobody signed it.
Yeah, that was a response to the complaint from the other night. I thought it was pretty funny, circulating a petition to ask the angry Indian to use proper Queen's English. Yeah.
Where was that?
Oh, our buddy Carl. I saw it on Facebook via Carl.
Oh, okay. He posted on the Horn Group?
Or maybe on my page. I can't remember which.
If he's out there, listen, Carl, stop doing all the all caps thing.
No, it was Facebook. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, it was.
Speaking of Facebook, I saw a handsome young man's picture on there today.
Oh, would it be a handsome young hillbilly man?
Yeah, he had glasses on and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, he cleans up real good.
Oh, yeah. I guess so. But when I first met him, he had some torn jeans on and that damn cowboy hat.
Well, yeah, six weeks of ranch handing kind of worked over his wardrobe.
I almost posted on that picture. He posted that. Where's the hat? You look bad. Lose the glasses. Bring back the hat.
Oh, the hat's still here.
Think he'd throw the hat away. Or
oh no, that's a sure enough Tony Lama 4X Beaver Felt cowboy hat.
And I must say, you look dashing in that hat too when you picked him up.
We took that picture at Permanente Brothers, and I just did that on a lark because it's actually a size too small for me, so it felt like one of those little one of those little block hats that. I like a good hat though, I really do.
Oh, Ace just messaged me in Skype. Oh, come on, Brother Sparky, Carl's all caps is hilarious.
Actually, Carl makes me laugh.
Carl makes me laugh a lot. Especially the post, in the name of Jesus. Sounds a little windy in Humboldt this evening.
Yeah, Bob, I was thinking.
My mic's been muted.
My younger brother went to law school. He went to like Loyola. And it was, I think, only 6 or 7 G's a semester or something. Then when his son went, it had gone up to, I don't know, 5 times or something like that. It went up a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it was pretty crazy expensive even for... Well, see, I didn't get to have in-state tuition at WVU, so they really got me. It was like, $7,000 a year or something. I can only guess what it is now.
And then you see all those commercials about... you know, that one with the pretty girl, and she doesn't know what she's going to do for a career. Oh, don't worry about money. We'll find a school for you. You know what I'm talking about? Where she's just kind of dancing around.
That ad that, yeah.
That's like those commercials for ITT Tech and those other schools, which I don't think they're worth the degree you get. And they look real serious and real straightforward, but I don't think so. I've heard a lot of bad things about that. Have you? Are you guys?
I just have a pretty hard and fast rule. If an institution of higher learning is advertising on television, anything other than the PSAs that they run at halftime of sporting events, you don't want to go there.
Or if they sponsor a football stadium.
True. Yeah. The whole idea of the University of Phoenix is pretty laughable from jump.
Yeah,
well,
the one
with
ITT Tech, but then there's the when I was living in Vegas, there was the Art Institute. There was another one, and I was talking with somebody, and they were going there, and it was like $30,000. I'm thinking, you know, once you get out, even then, you're not going to start off as a chef, you know. And the guy happened to kind of know. Peripherally, you know, going there, but he ended up being a bartender. You know, I don't know what he did, you know, plus track. I don't know. I guess you make maybe even more money as a bartender, you know, with tips and whatnot, but, you know, if you're in the right bar and stuff, but, you know, you got that $30,000 debt hanging over your head, and that's nothing compared to $120,000. And that brings up another point about, like, if you say you want to be a professor or something, how do you pay that debt off? I guess you work the next 20 years of your life.
Every single one of those for-profit colleges, and I'll use ITT Tech and University of Phoenix combined, their entire goal is to get students to borrow money under the federal student loan program because those debts cannot be discharged through bankruptcy. So they are in the business of getting students to borrow money, the university gets it, and the student is screwed forever, and none, I repeat, none of the credits that you earn at that, quote, university, unquote, are transferable to any four-year degree that would get you into med school, law school, whatever. They are absolutely not transferable because none of those universities are accredited. It is simply a scam by a bunch of banksters to get students to borrow money, to give it to them, and then they go to the bank, and you're stuck with the debt as a student, and there is no value. There's no transferability, and I don't care if you get your degree in court reporting or crime scene investigator or electronics technician or anything. No company buys that degree because all you got to do is pay them the $140,000 or whatever, and at the end of 3 or 4 years, they give you a piece of paper that says you've got this skills. But unlike the A-plus exam, which is a computer repair number from 10 years ago kind of thing, the computer industry wrote the A-plus exam, like the College Board writes the AP exam. And if you pass the A-plus exam, then it would be accepted. But if you go to ITT Tech in computer repair and get a certificate from ITT Tech, it's nothing because nobody other than that university has certified the training. They're garbage.
See, I know that. The weird thing is I can't believe that those commercials can be run legally. Another free market.
The federal government has tried and tried and tried to remove federal funding from universities, i.e. these universities we're talking about, that can't show a certain hiring rate, within a year of graduation, a certain percentage of your graduates have been employed in this, that, or the other thing, or you are accredited by, out here in California, it's WASC, Western Association of Schools and Colleges. If you're not accredited by WASC and you're operating in California, you have to show that your graduates, a certain percentage of your graduates, attain full-time jobs. Their other scam is they create phony businesses, hire the people for 2 months doing nothing, and then can them, but they show it as a hiring rate. It is nothing but a flim-flam scam.
So good.
They used to call it a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
I wish Tim from L.A. was here. He went to DeVry.
Oh, man.
And he got a master's degree.
That's not one of the good ones.
DeVry?
No, DeVry happens to be one of those that started out kind of early and really tried to do a decent job. But it's one once. And maybe he lucked into finding somebody that hired him because he had the piece of paper, and he was smart enough to be able to hold his job. But a whole lot of these people that come out of these schools, they don't know shit when they get out.
I don't know if he has a job yet, Roger.
Okay, well, my daughter-in-law's...
He may still be going to school. I don't know.
He is.
My daughter-in-law's sister got bought into one of these things. And she ended up with a divorce and a degree. And she went to apply for jobs. And the folks said, well, this degree ain't worth shit. And she went, well, how come it's not worth shit? I paid good money for it. Well, you didn't learn anything. Well, she's not all that bright either, but that's another side of the story. But her degree was worth absolutely nothing. And it wasn't until her father died and left her some money that she was able to get out from under. She was living with my son and daughter-in-law in their house doing, quote, housekeeping, unquote, and trying to be an elder care worker to make a little bit of money to try to live. Because she got suckered in.
Well, I actually got suckered in back in the 80s at CDI, Control Data Institute. You know, basically two programs. One was, computer programming and computer tech. And I picked computer programming, and basically the course just consisted of, there were books, little books, and but there was a, and then there was like you wrote a program in BASIC, you wrote a program in Fortran, a program in COBOL, and I know these are all ancient languages and RPG too. And that was it, just one program. And that doesn't really get you, you know, I kind of got some semblance of an understanding, but nothing. And I got a job and it didn't, you know, basically doing computer backups and,
an operator.
That lasted for a while, but.
But you were certified as a specialist.
Yeah. But just by writing one program in BASIC, and, you know, nobody even really looked at that seriously.
Nope. Well, those are all ancient languages that.
I was certified by the state of California once upon a time. But my certification expired. I don't need it anymore because I'm retired.
Shut it, Sparky.
Well, who does?
Well, I'm just saying that little yellow union dues receipt gets you anywhere. You can go anywhere in the country with one of those, and if there's work going on out of another local somewhere. I mean, you can go from California to Florida or anywhere, any state where there's a local union, sign their books that they got work going on, big power plants, whatever. You want to be a boomer, we call boomers. People just tramp around all over the country, go to work. As long as it said journeyman inside wireman on there, you can go to work if they got work.
I want to insert something before the topic gets away. I saw something on Max Kaiser last night where I'm not sure exactly who it is in Congress is trying to get a bill introduced that will allow student debt to be nullified by bankruptcy.
Well, good luck with that with the Republican controlled House and Senate.
Is it a Democrat?
I'm not even sure who it is. Max was kind of vague about that, but even the fact that somebody's bringing it up as a topic is hopeful to me, because now that the student debt is higher than any other kind of consumer debt in the country, the Wall Street's starting to freak out, and what they're looking at is just massive defaults and a lot of people with charges against them for not being able to pay their student loans. So even the fact that somebody's talking about changing the law that they just fucking passed. I mean, they just passed this thing a couple of years ago to prevent student debt from being discharged. Even that brings the topic up. I think that's hopeful in a way.
Well, it's hopeful. I just don't see the people. I mean, maybe the situation is that dire that they realize they have to do something. You know, I mean, thank goodness I didn't get into debt, but that kind of debt. But it's, you know, I could see where if, you know, you go to school, and next thing you know, you have $60,000, $100,000, and then you're working as a barista part time because it's about all you can get now. It seems mostly in a lot of places.
Well, I think that they finally figured out it's affecting the home market sales, because all these kids just getting to the point in their lives when they want to settle down and have a family and buy a house can't do any of those things. And so they're seeing that in the long run it will damage the economy even more than defaults would.
Well, and Elizabeth Warren was trying to get a bill through a while back to drop the interest rate on student loans to the same interest rate that banks are paying to borrow money to loan out as student loans.
0.5%.
Yeah. Instead of 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. Which is just so blatant. It should make everybody cringe.
Except the right-wing assholes that say, well, why should we give these students any money?
Well, that's just like cutting the social benefit, you know, trying to get rid of Social Security, which is slowly. See, seem to be on the way to doing and just cutting, like you were saying yesterday or the day before, Bob, about, cutting a little over $5 of food stamps a day or something, those only go so far, right?
Well, but that's the thing. Americans now live on something approaching a buck a day.
That's being liberal, Bob.
That's what...
People on food stamps?
Yeah.
That's you're missing the whole personal responsibility and all that.
Well, yeah, it's all those ramen noodles that will encourage people to stop treating food stamps like a hammock.
That's right. That's
and
right.
becoming dependent on the government.
That's right, and you'll not see that bill to where it make it possible to discharge student loan debt. See the light of day because, personal responsibility and all that shit. Because that's the kind of government we have now.
Oh, by the way, for anybody interested in a real world update of the wonderful world of tuition, we just got a note from our buddy Tom there in the Bay Area who said, and in 2015, tuition and room and board in the dorms is about $35,000. Yes, $35,000 per year. My son will be graduating in a few months, and they don't pay the teachers. Teachers aren't paid worth a damn anymore. But this is the overall effect. Again, I hate to sound like a broken record, but this is what you get. Reagan did it to California, and then what he did to California, he did to the rest of the country.
And then Janet Napolitano, who's now the head of the UC Regents or something, got hit with an open mic with that demonstration that happened a couple of days ago. I posted on my page with all the cops. And she said, we don't need to listen to this crap, when it was the students coming there and taking off their shirts and throwing fake money at them and say, come on, you're screwing us. And, I mean, they were doing it quasi-politely, and all of a sudden there's a line of cops in riot gear in the room of the UC Regents meeting, for Christ's sake. It's the same goddamn thing that Reagan did back in the 60s over the Vietnam War protests.
It worked then.
Yeah, and it's working now. Damn it.
How did Janet Napolitano... Isn't she from Arizona?
Yeah, she was the governor of Arizona.
Well, how'd she get on the UC Regents board?
Oh, she became somebody higher mucky muck in a presidential administration.
Yeah, she retired
from that and then got appointed by Jerry Brown to the UC Regent board because she's such a fantastic fucking executive. Sorry.
Oh, so we can blame Jerry Brown for that one, huh?
Yep.
Wasn't she the Homeland Security chief or whatever?
Yeah,
sounds right.
Yeah,
I just wasn't following along because when I hear her name, I think Arizona, and I was like, "How's she in California?" Never mind.
No, she's the head of the UC Regents,
she was
president of Berkeley or some damn thing.
No, it's the statewide UC Regents.
Good friend of Jerry Brown. Never mind.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Brown has disappointed me so much. Many, many years ago, I was walking down a old logging road at a protest, and up here in Northern California over redwood trees and crap like that. And I spent about a half an hour walking down the road just having a chat with Jerry Brown. And he was a really intelligent, knowledgeable, thoughtful individual. But the crap he's come up with in the last few years with regard to fracking and this tuition increase and a bunch of other crap, I have totally lost anything in any kind of respect I had for Jerry Brown.
Yeah, but he got the state out of deficit.
But I think he smoked too much dope with Linda Ronstadt.
Moonbeam. Well, like Neil Young has a petition to impeach him over fracking.
Well, that ain't going anywhere, but I'll tell you, it's going to be real interesting this May down in Anaheim at the California State Democratic Convention, because last year there was a huge anti-fracking number that got shut down by John Burton and Jerry Brown and all that, and Larry will probably expound on it for 30 minutes. But it was interesting, and it was strong, and this is next year. And I'm wondering what's going to happen at this year's Democratic Convention. On the Monday of May 18th or something like that, I'll give a call. Or maybe the Friday after that, I'll give a call and tell you what all happened down there.
Are you going to go?
Yeah, I'm a delegate.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
I thought getting involved could make a difference, and I tried to get out of it this year, but it didn't happen, but I'm not going to be a member of the Democratic Central Committee after my four-year term is up. I'm done with it. I'm just going to drink beer and grow asparagus.
You know what? That sounds like one of the better ideas I've heard in a while, Roger. No, I mean,
potatoes are coming along.
What, Sparky?
I said my stepson's red potatoes are coming along.
Oh, my yellows and purples have poked through, and I got green fuzz in my garden, and got to till it again to get rid of the green fuzz in about another week.
Oh, I got oak tree fuzz all over. That's what giving me fits with my
allergy. Wait, green fuzz?
Yeah, and that first crop of weeds comes up in your garden area.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's a green fuzz, and you till it in, and hopefully all the weed seeds have germinated. Now you plant, you don't have to weed so much.
Well, I got four blueberry plants going. They're looking pretty good so far.
I wanted to pop in and say hello again to Roger and Greg and Jack and the people who have come in. I'm still listening.
Hey, Larry.
I'll get a chance to contribute probably at the end of the hour, but I wanted to ask Roger about the for-profit schools, you know, the for-profit degree mills for four-year degrees and stuff. Those degrees aren't worth anything?
No.
No, okay. No. No, a for-profit degree is useless. We had one of the bigger, I mean, it was a little affair, relatively speaking, but we had this joint called Mountain State University going over in Beckley, and it was being run for-profit, and you know, They would walk you patiently through the student loan process and get you in debt up to your elbows. And they graduated chemistry majors who didn't know what a test tube was. I'm not kidding. And then they just went belly up, and everybody found out that their degrees weren't worth a damn. I mean, you've got people who spent $100,000 becoming certified nurse practitioners, for instance. Or physician's assistants. And suddenly their degrees were worth nothing.
The nursing degrees out here are actually okay. It's all the other fields that are really bad, like computer tech and all that stuff. But my niece's daughter went to nursing, and she made out okay, got a job right away.
Well, congratulations. Maybe she went to a good one, but 99% of them are bad.
Yeah, I have no idea, but she seems to be doing okay. I think it depends on the field, too.
Well, it might also depend on the individual, that they get enough knowledge to where when they get a job and they get into the job, they're smart enough to pick up on what they didn't learn at the for-profit place and cover their ass until they do learn it. But the majority of the computer technology, police technician, coroner assistant, et cetera, are pure garbage. They're simply another right-wing number to suck money out of the poor people that sign a piece of paper, and the government passes out the money, and they take it to the bank, and the poor student is left holding the bag.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that the one issue here was that the nursing population was so low that they had to backfill.
Yeah, and a few years ago here in California, the teacher shortage was so bad that if you had 2 years of college, you could get an emergency credential and they'd put you in the classroom. But when the doctor shortage got bad, oh, we need to raise the price of the doctors. Not deal with the American Medical Association that wouldn't allow people to go to medical school. We need to raise the wages so we can recruit people. But they didn't want to raise the wages of the teachers to allow more people to go into teaching. Wisconsin right now, because of the cut in the education and the cut of the collective bargaining of public employees in Wisconsin, they've got like a 90% drop in people who are studying to become teachers. I mean, students aren't stupid. Why the hell should I go $50,000, $60,000 in debt to get a job that pays me $20,000 a year? Hell, I'll be 40 years old before I can pay the damn loan off and start making babies and buy a house. Come on, when you're 22, 23, 24 years old is when you're supposed to be able to go out, get a good job because you've got a good education, and get married, start raising babies, and buy a house. And as was said earlier, a lot of people are starting to figure out that when you don't have a young population wanting to buy houses, the entire economy falls to shit.
Well, you're a teacher, Roger, so you know that teachers always get screwed.
I used to be, not anymore.
Yeah, I know, but you
10 years.
You know that they are at the bottom.
Oh yeah, but the thing is, we knew we were at the bottom of the pay scale. Okay, we knew that. But one of the great things was we had a great health and welfare package. Full insurance, dental, medical, vision, whole nine yards. Totally paid for. And on top of that, after you put in your 20, 30 years, you had a pension that was locked in, guaranteed.
Bulletproof.
So, okay, I'll work for less for 25, 30 years, something like that. But when I quit at 60, 65 years old, I'm going to get money the rest of my life. So I'll work for now because I don't need to go on a trip to the Caribbean every summer. I don't need a new car every 2 years. I can go 10 years between cars and all the rest of that. But you did it, and you did it because you like kids and you wanted to teach and da-da-da, all kind of altruistic bullshit.
Oh, sure.
But the fact is that you knew that when you retired, I mean, like the California pension that I get guarantees me that it will never be worth less than 80% of its value when I retired. As soon as my pension by the consumer price index goes below 80%, it gets supplemented to bring me back up to 80%. So when I retired, I was getting like $1,500 a month. That's what I still get. Mm-hmm. However, inflation's gone up over the last 10 years. And in the not too distant future, I'm going to get a quarterly check that supplements. Now, my mother was a teacher. Before she died at the age of 95, she got more money off her supplemental retirement than she got from her regular. I got a phone call coming in. I got to quit.
All right, Roger.
My mom was only a teacher in the California school system for 6 years. And she got a pension, little pension, but then the death benefit wasn't that bad. It was like $6,000 when she passed away from my dad.
Well, that's another thing that started in the 80s. They started with knocking out pensions and starting these 401ks. You know, where they'd match, the company would match your money.
and you could quote unquote invest it. And I had one and I looked at it, but it was so vague as to what you were investing in. It was like big growth, medium growth, small growth. And I remember going to, there was a company meeting, Joe, we talked to the guy. He's like, well, you're 40, took time, medium risk would be, but I was trying to find out what company is my 401k or my IRA, the 401k investing in, and he didn't really even have an answer, so you don't even know if you're.
Did you get a statement every year?
Yeah, but I mean, I never, barely 1%.
Oh, interesting observation coming in from Luda. Luda says, what's sad is my free Job Corps degree and community college degree I got while I was there is looked at with more prestige than one of these University of Phoenix, North Tech Central, Houston University, etc. Thank Zoroaster that I was never stupid enough to drop $100K on a degree like that. And, this goes back. Roger said something a minute ago about going to University of Phoenix to get a degree in coroner's assistant. I guess, is that an American thing? That we treat what is supposedly higher education as vocational training, and I'm not being elitist or snotty here. This is a real question. I know, for instance, if I understand correctly, and our German listeners can correct me, but there's vocational training, and there's university, and they're different things. Advanced vocational training is very, very intensive, and you wind up with an amazing skill set. But it is different from university stuff because it's not the same kind of subject matter. But what we have here in the United States is a growing trend in the notion of that higher education, the college and university, is the same thing as advanced vocational training. And it just isn't. By the way, we've only got 22 minutes remaining in the program. And I should mention that we are we got a lot of help earlier in the day and overnight from Greg and Bernice and from Ron and from Janie and from John. But we are $150 away from finishing the week even as we speak right now. So that's just out there, and it would be nice not
to. Okay, Bob.
Yeah.
I still owe you 50. I'm going to throw in another 100. I'm going to mail it to you because I'm having trouble with the computer.
Okay, no worries.
I rest assured, I'll figure out the computer. I will.
Don't worry. I mean, this is just. And again, something that was mentioned the other night, and anybody else that wants to is welcome to chime in on this. Thank you also last night to Dan in Virginia.
You know,
but just to throw this out there because it was mentioned
wait
a couple
a minute,
of hours ago, I get the sense that a lot of the regulars who keep this going really, really would like to see. And it doesn't have to be huge, but people who have never contributed before, who have the ability to do so, the people who regularly do so would like to see more people step into that process. I had a note from Robert in Australia earlier today. You know, he does the 19th of the month up over down under challenge most every month, and he sent me a note saying, sorry, I can't do the 20th of the month challenge again this month. Hopefully somebody else will jump in. I should be back by next month. And it kind of, well, I really appreciated Robert, you know, sending the note to say that, because, you know, he's established that little spot. But by the same token, you know, he'd love to see some new folks. Hold on. He'd love to see some new folks step into the process. $5, $10 doesn't matter. Over there, you know, at the PayPal interface or by the mail. So anybody else who has any input on that is welcome to jump in.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Sparky.
If anybody wants to take the slack, you know what I did with the pay it forward thing for the Mac.
Right, yeah, exactly.
If anybody wants to take over my $100 a month pull the pin challenge, just go right ahead, because I set up it. I went all in for a bunch of money.
By the way, speaking of the Mac, I've been watching the weather forecast, and hopefully things might get decent enough this weekend that we can actually carry a bunch of, and see, this is where it gets complicated. The studio is so small here, we have to be able to carry stuff out into the yard. And it's hard to do when it's raining or snowing or something. But we're supposed to have decent temperatures and sunshine both Saturday and Sunday. So maybe, hopefully, we can get that mixer and the Mac in, and maybe things will sound dramatically different come more in Monday.
Well, great news on my end. I'm getting ready to start the electrical upgrade in the man cave. My stepson was down for 3 days. We had a wonderful 3 days down here, and he helped me get some stuff out of the way by the lathe, which was up against the electrical panels and stuff. And I'm able to clean up some of the flood mess from back there now, and I'm going to start tearing apart the electrical panel. Old electrical panels that have been in this shop since 1968, and put new modern shit in.
Well, we're finally getting around to, because it's been just too damn cold to get down into an unheated basement and work on it. But that's another one of the things that's on the list for the weekend, ripping out a whole bunch of really old, nasty plumbing and replumbing this place. So I'm excited.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Bob, I wanted to mention that I heard yesterday that from the administrative assistant to the dean of students at my community college, that there's a community college down in the peninsula, which is down in San Mateo area. They're starting to offer bachelor's degrees at community colleges, which sounds weird. How do they have the infrastructure to do that sort of a thing? Oh, sorry.
Anybody?
I have no idea. I'm just worried about the snakes.
You're just worried about the schools, period, in general.
No, the snakes. I hear snakes.
Oh, snakes. Okay. All right, because I was hearing. Also, Carol, I'd like to do a one-on-one with you after 6 o'clock, if I can, for a little bit. It's about the iPad.
I can talk to you for a few minutes. I've got another I have another chat date. But yeah, I can put it off for a little bit and talk to you for a few.
That's okay. Thank you very much. So I missed most of the discussion, but
podcaster.
Yeah.
Can I answer your question about the community colleges?
Yes.
I mean, the community colleges are joining up with some of the state colleges so people don't have to travel as far to do some of the state college work on their campuses.
Okay, thank you.
And get the credit. Like Chico State has partnered up with Shasta College, and I'm sure Humboldt State is probably partnered up with College of Assistant Use or some of the other junior colleges around, and they might have credited courses.
The whole emphasis in community college now is to get people ready for transfer. You know, they want to get them in and get them out. They don't want to have long-term students like me in there, you know, taking courses, because we're just taking up space, right?
Well, have they kicked you out yet, Larry?
Well, they haven't done so, but they're threatening.
Oh.
They didn't say they're going to kick me out tomorrow, but they're threatening to kick long-term students out. So.
I'm surprised, as long as you're paying.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I remember all these schools back in the 60s that used to advertise, I think Greg does too. They used to Control Data Institute and whatever, the Bryman School for Nursing. And I don't know if those schools were worth anything. My mother went to the Bryman School for a little while for nursing.
Oh, those outfits were advertising when we first got WTCG Channel 17 out of Atlanta on our cable system when I was in eighth grade. They were big advertisers with what later went on to become TBS.
Yeah.
I read my union newspaper this week that our local apprenticeship training center is expanding again. They have a remote building now. Where the apprenticeship training center is built now, I mean, they can't really add on because of the... But they have all this big lot off one side. They have poles and stuff for IBEW 15-1245 to have their pole climbing school, and they put in the training center is all solar now, and they're expanding some more because they need newer classrooms to teach more different classes.
See, that, you know, what you say there, Sparky, just, and I'm not saying you do, but the topic just frustrates the out of me, because that's what we need desperately here in Central Appalachia. We need to be training young people for the future. Instead of offering to let students, mostly young men, go into a bunch of damn debt getting a minor's certification for an industry that won't be here for enough for them to have a full career.
Well, the electrician trade, you never stop learning now. You can't.
No, because it's...
Upgrade classes, you have to take 30... Every 3 years, you have to take 32 hours of continuing education to get your certification renewed.
And God only knows where I'm going to find the skill set if we ever do get to the point where we can live the dream of taking the horn off the grid. God only knows where I'm going to find the skill set to install that kind of a solar system, here at the mansion. Oh, and by the way, thanks going out to Asa in Vancouver. Thank you very kindly, Asa. We are now only $130 away from finishing the week to the good. That is really, really huge, Asa. We all appreciate it very much.
Bob, can I ask you one stupid question?
Well, you can ask me any question. I doubt if it's stupid. I take care of the stupid part.
You figure out how to fix your lift chair, chair with a new cylinder?
Yes. That's a pretty straightforward video.
You think you can do it?
Oh, I imagine.
Oh, did you order one yet? You can get them on Amazon.
No, I haven't ordered it yet, but I will be.
I've had to do it with the chair I'm sitting in right now. It's easy peasy. If you got a garbage can like that, it works great.
Here's something.
Because we don't want you sitting on the floor anymore.
It gets a little crampy. Yeah.
So if these people are graduating from these knots, from these schools that are giving away these bogus degrees, then how is it that they how do they get, and what kind of education do they get? Do they just, I mean, they offer classes, they have catalogs and all that stuff. So if like Roger is saying, they don't know anything or they don't know shit about anything, then how do they go through the process of matriculating and what's the curriculum about and all that stuff? You know, the curriculum of these schools.
Well, that's what I was getting at earlier, Larry, about, you know, going to a for-profit university to become a coroner's assistant. Wayne.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, that's not higher education. That's advanced vocational training.
Okay. That's like Control Data or any of these other places that are advertising on television saying, call this number and you can get your whatever degree in 2-year degree or whatever in some vocational field. Okay.
I have some good news. I was out bird watching yesterday and besides seeing a lot of eagles and peregrine falcons, I also, when I was up on the escarpment there, and I noticed many buildings have solar panels on top of them now. I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, compared to 5-10 years ago, very few, and a lot of them I think are doing that where people lease space and on top of buildings and stuff like that. So they're really pushing it here in Ontario, Canada, at least the solar and the wind.
Related to bird watching, I'm looking outside and I'm seeing fireflies. It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
From the back porch. It's only 70 degrees.
Nice. Are you the one that's down in Louisiana?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Blueberries planted. Let's see what happens then.
So Bob, you must have a lot of migratory birds come through West Virginia there with all the mountains and such.
Well, we've got a lot of raptors. We've got a lot of hawks, a lot of owls, peregrine falcons, some eagles. I'm really not sure about the migratories because. For instance, you know, the old talk about the first robin of spring. Well, the robins don't leave.
Same here. There was robin up here at a minus 30 degree night.
Yeah, they just change their diet and shut them up when they're freezing. Yes. I wouldn't, you know, I don't sing in minus 20 either, you know, Steve?
Yes.
But I'm not that much of a bird watcher, but we do have some migratory birds. It just, I'm not particularly good at it. I hear that, you know, we've got mockingbirds and, you'll still hear the occasional whippoorwill and, there used to be a lot more grouse than what there are.
Yes.
But habitat has been severely curtailed, as has been the. There used to be a lot more habitat for quail, but with the decline in agriculture, that went away too.
Grouse are good at scaring the hell out of you when you're walking through the woods.
Oh my God! Anybody who's the first time I ever heard a grouse start drumming in the woods, I thought somebody was starting up a four wheeler.
Yeah, when they take off, it just scares the hell out of you.
But you hear that, and then you're like, "What the?" You know. And they particularly like to do it to you during squirrel season.
Yeah, and they won't fly until you get really close to them, like within 10 feet. And yeah, hey, my neighbor feeds the birds all the time down here. He has a hummingbird feeder. He told me, and I don't know how true this is, the hummingbirds migrate to South America. Has anybody ever heard that?
Yeah, they do. They migrate a long damn way. And that's why
they go all the way up to Alaska.
That's why it's so important to take down the feeders at the end of summer.
Right. Well, actually, that's how the conversation got started. It was getting later in the summer, and he said, I'll have to take that down whenever it was, Labor Day or whenever. And I said, oh, yeah. He said, well, yeah, they won't leave. I said, oh, where'd they go? He said, well, I read where they go to South America. I said, huh, well, that'd be a good place to go in the wintertime.
Yeah, they fly all the way across the Gulf of Mexico there, a 300-mile trip.
Yeah, from the Gulf Coast to Yucatan.
Yep.
I had a yellow-beaked magpie convention going on in the big 100-year oak trees out behind the house a week ago. Luckily, most of them are scattered now. Talk about noisy.
We don't have any trees that old here anymore. They've all been cut down.
And see, that's, and we're running out of time, but that's where I get all nerdy, because this time of year, like driving across the New River Gorge Bridge, it looks like the mountains are wearing a crew cut. But this, you know, the Eastern Forest. Oh, I saw some documentary that said that the Eastern Forest of North America was completely different from anything we understand. If you go walking through Appalachian woods, you know, you're going to be battling brambles and briars and scrub and occasionally thickets of rhododendron. That's not the forest that was here before white folks got here. The forest that was here when white folks arrived was a managed forest, and it had trails through it that were like highway systems. And you know, massive American, you know, the one I get all misty-eyed about is the American chestnut, also called the wormy chestnut. These things were huge. And it was all cut down. The entire state of West Virginia was largely deforested by the turn of the 19th into the 20th century. And it was deforested for railroads, for oil and gas exploration. So all the foresting that you see in Appalachia, central Appalachia now, for the most part, is really, really new growth. And frankly, it's really scrubby. And yet people come here and go, oh, the majesty of the forests. Mm-mm. It ain't what it was.
Just a real quick, just stay in history thing.
I've heard you talk about that, you know, what the coming of the white man did to this country.
One of the best things to read on that, Jim, is Charles C. Mann's 1491 and Charles C. Mann's 1493. Those two books. I love those books. I go back and reread them periodically. They just blow my mind.
Just a quick this day in history thing. If I was on this property 100 years ago, I would be able to walk out my backyard and see a volcano erupting.
I thought you were on that property 100 years ago.
No, I wasn't.
Oh.
It's only been in the family since 1963.
Snap.
And that having, been, that having been that having
blurb in our paper today about it.
That having been said, it's time to roll out of here. It's a little less than 2 minutes before the hour. I want to thank everybody for keeping who keeps us on the air, for keeping us on the air first and foremost. I want to thank everybody for their participation. I want to especially welcome Ralphs to the group this evening. It was good to see her here, and hopefully we'll see more newbies. That's wonderful.
Good to talk to you guys, and I'm going to start the Mike Malloy thread.
Wonderful. Over at Democratic Underground, yes.
And Democratic Warrior.
Oh, yes, and Democratic Warrior. Thank you. And hopefully we'll see you again maybe next Friday, Ralphs.
Sure.
All right. Bye now. And good night, everyone in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. A gentle reminder, the conversation continues and will ramp up again at about 12:05. Eastern Daylight Time after Malloy closes his program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky, longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks to our other chat room moderators. Thank you, Lottie. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene, and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you very kindly. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, .org. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.